This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Trot Antic. Late last year, it was reported that the private data of 46.2 million mobile phone subscribers were leaked sometime in the middle of 2014. All 14 telcos were affected in what is Malaysia's biggest ever data breach. And in the studio with me to explain what all these mean for the average person is lawyer Fong Ching Leong. He chairs the KL Bar Information Technology and Publication Committee, but he's here commenting in his personal capacity. So what do we know since when the news was reported? What else do we know on what happened and so far who's responsible or culpable?
Well, the news that I recall, the last one was that one company was in possession of the data. They were given it by telcos pursuant to a certain directive of the MCMC. And subsequently, the police investigated and from that news, there was nothing from that anymore. So now we are basically in the dark. What is happening? What happens to the investigation?
Was it was the name of the company ever reported in the news media?
Well, it was reported by certain media. Names I cannot recall. But basically, they are a private limited company of Sdn Bhd, which has been given the data by the telcos to do some blocking exercise. In this is basically, if you lose your mobile phone, you basically go to their website or that provider and tell them to block the block the number. So, and even apparently even the phone can be blocked. But from that is their role, and that's all I know.
Mm-hmm. There was a report as well when the IGP said they have strong leads. Has anything been reported since then when they said they were launching an investigation?
Well, they other than the IGP's announcement, then nothing much about it. Well, there could be investigation that's being done, you know, behind the scene, which the media did not pick up. And sometimes it's due to sensitivity as well. If you report too many things on, you know, on the press, the perpetrators may start destroying evidence, run away, disappear. So there could be a reason why not much information is out in the open.
So all signs is pointing towards this third-party company that is responsible and not the telcos?
Well, I guess the investigation is all open. I'm just guessing. It's all open. Investigation, you gotta look in every angle. One, of course, first we got to determine whether that actual data came from that company or not. In the news report, whatever suspicion that it actually comes from the Sdn Bhd, but that company, but we do not know until the person, you know, is being charged and evidence is tendered that really happened. So information could or could not come from telco as well. So at the moment, we do not actually know.
Yeah. Mm. So on the consumer side, there was a website that was set up after the news of this breach was announced or reported, and it's sayakenahack.com. Why was it considered illegal by the MCMC?
Well, the MCMC, when what happened is actually they receive information from the Personal Data Protection Commissioner to say that this website is in breach of this section called Section 130 of the Personal Data Protection Act 2010, to say that the website processes personal data without the consent of data users. So then that is the reason why MCMC blocked website. And MCMC, their role is basically if you receive an instruction or information from another government agency, they will block it. They arbitrarily decide whether it is an offence or not, or whether they attempted offence or not, without really go to court and say that this is really an offence.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And what does processing data mean? Because this is just us going on a website, keying our IC number and finding out whether or not our information or personal data has been compromised.
But the definition of processing in the Personal Data Protection Act is very technical. But basically, if you keep personal data of other people, other individuals, it is deemed as processing. So in the present case, I think the Personal Data Protection Commissioner takes the position that the person who processes the data is in breach of Section 130 of the Personal Data Protection Act. But of course, if you look at their press report, they say this website is in breach of the PDPA, in short we call it. But a website cannot breach, if you look at the Act itself, the website cannot breach the section. It's the person actually who breaches the section.
The website owner.
The website owner. Lah. Mm. So of course, we don't know who, the website owner, we say it's Keith who did it. But to me, it's the website to me is basically an information providing website. Lah. To basically tell you whether the data is that your mobile your data has been compromised. So whether did he breach it? Of course, that is not up to me to say. But to me, there is a public interest in such website to tell you that whether your information has been compromised. If your information has been compromised, one of the first thing you want to do is to ensure whatever data you've been using as, let's say, your password needs to be changed immediately. Mm-hmm. If assuming that your mobile number, mobile number that you want to keep a secret, but you don't want people to, and you don't want people to know, you may want to, you know, for whatever reason, is to dispose the number and get a new number, or you know, or just to safeguard yourself. Whatever reason it is, once data has been compromised, the consumer should be told that their data has been compromised, so that steps can be taken to ensure you want to safeguard, you know, certain things like your safety or other information.
Can that argument be made about public interest or public service? Did the PDPA allow for this accommodation?
Well, there is, if I recall correctly, there is no provision on public interest. Mm-hmm. Of course, because PDPA, if you breach it, it's a criminal offence. So it's the Attorney General who decides whether to charge a person or not. So in deciding whether to charge or not, I would assume that they will take into the public interest. How do you put it? Public interest. Requirement as well, or public interest element as well, when deciding to charge a person or not. Basically, that website did good for us, did tell us that something's going on, and why should this person be, you know, prosecuted or being, you know, made liable for something?
What is the intention of the PDPA for having this rule on not allowing data to be processed in this manner? Like, under what scenario could it have led to abuse?
Well, this action is actually to prevent the unlawful collection of personal data. Basically it's to stop people from buying and selling data. In the past, before the PDPA, people have been buying and selling and renting and providing data for a fee. For example, is they go to this company and say, I want all the data, I pay you X amount of money. Or you provide me a list of data, I will make, let's say, calls and sell insurance or sell credit cards or sell, you know, whatever package that I can, and I'll give you a cut from there. So it is basically monetization of the data. So as consumers, you'll be, you know, annoyed now with all this information coming, all this, you know, calls and messages coming in, and of course, data like this, you also don't want to. Everybody to have, let's say, all these people to have your IC number. What if that person, you know, one of the employees takes your data and, you know, wrongfully misuse it? So there was a case which I remember is a bank officer actually, and being a bank officer, she had access to data of certain individuals, and one of the individuals is someone she dislikes, and using that data, she, you know, tweeted information about her bank details on her Twitter account. So she will say, you know, well, in your account, you have this much of money, and your account, you say you have no money, but your account, you know, there's money in it. But why you say no money, but you're going for holidays and so on and so forth. So it sometimes the abuse of the information is not about, you know, money. It's sometimes to spite that person or to create annoyance to the other person.
You have wrote on your blog, and you've been quoted in other media as well, as saying you'd like to see more checks and balances when it comes to the blocking of websites. How would this work?
Well, the current provision now, I think, not mistaken, Section 263 of the Communication Multimedia Act, I may be wrong on the section number, but basically, if the MCMC receives information about a certain offence being attempted or being being committed, they have the powers to instruct the internet service provider, the ISPs, to prevent access to it. Basically, MCMC can block any website if they believe that there is an attempt of any offence. And the word here is attempt of any offence. You don't need to do it, but you attempt to do it. The MCMC can block the website, and they can decide whether it blocks or not. So, of course, there are some websites that needs to be blocked, you know, and the terrorist materials, pornography, gambling, and, you know, illegal downloads of movies and you know, whatever thing illegal. Well, there should be, you know, there's some form of blocking. There cannot be, you know, 100% free internet for all, because let's say child pornography freely access to everyone. But there must be check and balances. Currently, I do not know of any case laws or any cases of people challenging, going to court to challenge the blocking order. Even website, for example, like Medium.com, a very informative website, but certain sites and the postings is deemed to have committed some offence, is blocked. So we have no access to every other good information on Medium.
Was that under PDPA too?
No, that is not under PDPA, but that's under the powers of, they blocked it under the powers of MCMC. So if, basically, if the person wants to challenge the order of blocking, it is not any other ordinary person like us to go and challenge it. It's usually the person aggrieved, which is the owner of the website, owner of the, you know, the platform, to go to court and challenge it. So you cannot have because you got to prove that you have been affected legally by the order. So what can be done is, for example, if you look at the sedition amendments, I don't think it's been passed, is that if, assuming that there is a website that has seditious materials, that the DPP has to go to court and apply for an order, a session is not mistaken, to apply for order to block the website. And the court will decide whether to block the website based on the evidence that is provided. So basically, the DPP has to come out with, you know, an application, an affidavit, everything, put it in, and the court decides. And from that provision, if, let's say, I am an affected party, I got wind of this application, I will go to court and appear to court, and the court say, I will be affected by your order. This is the reason why. And the court then can have a check and, you know, check and balance. Oh, I hear both sides' story. I hereby deem that, you know, I hereby order that everything, all these things should or shouldn't be blocked. So I think the power should be left to the court to decide whether to block or not. Of course, there will be urgent matters where the court, for example, is not in session, for example. So I guess there will be some provision, let's say, I don't see a reason why the prosecutor or the government go and find a sessions court judge, you know, at the middle of the night, as you see in the TV, it will wake him up from his sleep and wake up, can you please sign this order? And sign. Mm-hmm. So to me, is it possible we can do that? I know. I think that can be done.
I'm speaking today to lawyer Fong Ching Leong about the biggest data breach in Malaysian history. I'll ask him how we can stop companies from collecting our personal data after this short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. With me today is lawyer Fung Ching Leong. He specializes in privacy and cyber laws, and we're talking about the lessons of the data breach involving more than 46 million mobile phone subscribers. What does it matter? I mean, how much difference did it make that this data breach occurred after the PDPA came into force? If this was before the PDPA, would how the authorities handled it be different?
Well, if there was no, assuming that this happened before the PDPA, well, there's nothing much the authorities can do because there's no, breach of data protection laws. So in that case, I guess the authorities will have to look at a different angle. Let's say, is there corruption involved? Is there theft involved? Is there cheating involved? Is there hacking involved? So it will be a different angle for the authorities to look at. But with the PDPA, then it's easier for the authorities because the authorities merely need to decide whether there's unlawful collection or processing of any personal data, you know, without consent. Mm-hmm. That is the two differences.
You make a distinction on your blog on what should be considered illegal or criminal. One is when a data user or data processor allow the download of data as opposed to just providing the information. I think you're referring to the Saikana Hack website. Mm. What's the difference between those two? Because I'm thinking if I was not downloading the data of someone else, I could just have easily wrote down the information I gleaned from the website.
Well, Saikana Hack is slightly different because Saikana Hack, if let's you key in your IC number and the basically, it will tell you, as the website tell you, is whether your data has been compromised or not. And you, other than that, they will give you a mass number, supposedly to be your phone number. And that's the information that you have. That is the so-called personal data that is being disclosed to the public. So if I have, let's say, IC number, I key in your IC number, and that is the information that I have. There's actually no personal data involved in the website does not provide you with any personal data. But in the second scenario is where I can download your data, that is a certain breach because I'm disclosing your personal data, I'm processing your personal data without a consent of data user or even data subject.
Would it be a more clear-cut offense if the website has provided the full mobile number instead of just a mask number?
If they provide a full mobile number, I think it is still arguable because a number is just a number. It does not identify you. It doesn't tell you your name, does not tell your address, does not even tell who you are. So the number can be attributed to a lot of people. Let's say I buy a prepaid number. That number could be owned by the past 4 or 5 users before this. So a number itself, by itself, is unlikely to be personal data by itself.
Okay.
So it's still arguable. It's still arguable because I key in a number. Let's say I put in an IC number. I got your phone number that I know how to contact you. Mm. And assuming that number is still valid, I call that number and I harass you over the phone, then I think something could be done from there. Okay. I mean, you can actually lodge a complaint because of that.
So mobile number is one thing. What about IC number? Is that because we give our IC number away so easily over the phone to do verification to the salesperson offering us a new credit card? Is that number more precious?
Yes, IC number is unique to each Malaysian. It is our personal data. Unfortunately, in the past, our practice is to give IC number everywhere. So sometimes you can even guess a person's IC number. Let's say I know your name. I Google your name, and if you have joined any contest, in the past, the last 4 digits will be reviewed on the list. Mm-hmm. But the first 8 digits are all must. If I know your birthday, I know the first 6 digits. Yeah. So then it's between 1 to 14 or something like that. So all I need to do is I go to a certain website. If you are registered voter, I go to the SPR's website, the Election Commission's website. If you are a taxpayer, I go to the IRB website, Inland Revenue Board's website, I key in your IC number, I will know your full name. So there are a few websites which I can check how to basically convert the number into a full name. And there are a few, of course, that is basically public website, but there are also some companies, they have their own intranet, their own system, let's say insurance companies or even banks. I key in a certain number, I can get the details of that. Yeah. So with your IC number, when with your full name, for example, if I want to sue you, or if I want to make a bank loan, or if I want to know more about you, I can use that data to get more information about you. So, of course, on the legal side, what we do is, assuming I only know your name, but I do not know your IC number, and usually when I sue a person, I will need to provide the IC number. All I need to do is find out all this information. I Google your name. I find the last four digits. I check your Facebook, when's your birthday, and yeah. then I just guess that that's the 1 to 14. It's, you know, 1 yeah. out of 14. I'm sure I'll get it correctly.
Yeah. So we talked, I mean, a few years ago, you came on the show to talk about this right to be forgotten. Is there such a thing here in Malaysia? How do we scrub our information off the internet if that is, if our IC is online?
Well, if the website operator is Malaysia company, then I can exercise my right under Section 38 of the Personal Data Protection Act, not mistaken, is to withdraw my consent of processing a personal data. Basically, it's you should tell them, under Section 38, PDPA, I withdraw my consent of you processing my personal data, and therefore you must remove all personal data. But that only can work for a Malaysian company or a company based in Malaysia. But if assuming there's a foreign company, and if you go to Google, there's actually a lot of websites that processes PDF files for no reasons. Mm-hmm. And somehow you click on the website, you end up the website with your data there, and you have no idea who these people are. And it is almost impossible to scrub off information off the internet. Mm-hmm. Unless they die a natural death.
Means they just get buried, or the website owner updating it.
So for example, let's say Joe Cities. Yeah. Joe Cities website is those who are still very young would know that Joe Cities, we don't know that Joe Cities is actually a web hosting website. Before you have your blogger, there's Joe Cities to create personal websites. So for Joe Cities, there is, if you set up your website prior to a certain date, that website no longer exists. You cannot find it anymore on the internet. But if your website, if you've created a Joe Cities website after a certain period, there's some so-called website called Old Cities, I'm not mistaken, that still processes the old data. Of course, then you can look at other websites like called the Wayback Machine, which processes certain screenshots of your websites. But there's another website called Zoom, all this, all long gone already. Mm-hmm. But they could be sitting in someone's computer, you know, in the storeroom, as a stored in data, but it's not accessible. Mm. But basically, it's die a natural death.
What about this right to be informed? If a company get hold of our information and they intend to monetize it, do we have a right to be informed?
Well, under the PDPA, you have the right to ask for a copy of your person data. What person data that do they keep? And that's about it.
Malaysian companies.
Malaysian companies. Yeah. If assuming there's a data breach, there is no duty for them to tell you, sorry, your data has been breached. You basically they can just, okay, it's gone, that's fine, we just sort it out ourselves. But I understand the commissioner wants to introduce the duty to inform the public if there is a breach of data. Mm-hmm. I think if not Mexican Island or Northern Ireland, I think it's Northern Ireland, there is a provision to inform all your data subjects, all your customers, if the breach occurs to more than, I think, 50 or 100 people. a certain number, exceeding certain number. If you exceed a certain number, then you have to go and notify them. So a limit would be good. A number would be good because it would not be so onerous to companies. If you put every other number to notify that person, I think it's okay. If assuming that my own information, the telco lost it, he should be telling me that, sorry, I lost your number. Lost your information, and this is what we can do for you.
So it's just as simple as writing to Maybank, for example, and say, hey, what information do you have on me at the moment? And they'll give you a report?
Yes. You can actually write to them and tell them, I want to access my data under the Personal Data Protection Act. Tell me what data are you processing.
Okay.
But you have to pay a fee.
So how much is that fee?
Oh, it's affordable. I think two ringgit, 10 ringgit. It's a small amount.
As a tip then, when should we not give over our IC details?
Well, in Malaysia, what a lot of companies do is, you don't give me the information. If you don't give me the information, you do not get my services, so you're going to get the product. I guess...
Is that in a grey area legally?
Not grey area. Companies have the right not to provide information, not to provide their service. Any other person has the right not to provide their service or products if they do not know, they do not have the information about you. So, for example, telco. It's by law, I need your IC number. If you don't give me IC number, how can I operate without your IC number? And likewise, if you buy my use my in any other places, you will need the other site's information to effectively provide the service or provide the goods. When not to give is, I guess. It's hard to say because even if you go to, let's say, a condominium, the guards will say, give me an IC number, and they will take a picture of IC number. So if you don't give the IC and they will deny your entry. So I guess it has to come from the top. In certain places, let's say in Hong Kong, there are scenarios to say, there are actually cases to say, companies cannot do this, building owners cannot do this, and they basically put up a case report, or they put in a guideline to say, you cannot do all these things. So, for example, I remember one case is the company cannot compel the collection of biometric information about the employee. So, for example, you want to go to the office, you need to put in your thumbprint, and someone lodged a complaint to the commissioner over there, and the commissioner actually wrote a report and said, this cannot be done. This, you cannot compel your employee to give the biometric information if they do not want to give the information because the processing is unfair.
But no such thing exists here.
Well, it can be done, actually. But so far, the commissioner has not come up with any of these guidelines to tell data users, you cannot do all these things.
Did the Data Protection Commissioner say something at one point about if a company collects too much information, then that becomes a problem?
Yes. Actually, under the provision of the PDPA, you cannot process excessive personal data. Of course, excessive is case-to-case basis. Certain information that is necessary, you can process. Information that is unnecessary, the users have the right not to provide it.
And how much is too much then? Because they can require access to the entire ecosystem in your telephone and you wouldn't know it.
Well, then it becomes the obligation of the company because they become your guardian of your information. Once I give my information to a certain guardian, he or she will need to ensure they protect the data as if it's their own personal data. Of course, here in Malaysia, we do not know whether all this has been done.
When filling up forms, for example, would you recommend not filling up columns that are not deemed mandatory without that asterisk?
Yeah. Yes. I always pick and choose information that I want to give. It depends who I want to give. It depends who I give to. if assuming I am doing it, giving it to a company that I have not known of, but I want to get, you know, something out of them, I will provide limited information. For example, I do not give them my full name. I give them, you know, my usual initials. I do not give them the email that I always use. I give them the other email that I always use as to sign up for things and get junk emails from there. So I will choose, I pick and choose that. Even for mobile numbers, I have two mobile numbers. The other mobile number that I use it for banking services, mm-hmm. I will give that so that I don't need to, you know, take any calls. If I know calls are coming, I know there's certainly marketing calls.
Right. Is it illegal to provide inaccurate information on those forms?
Well, it is not illegal to provide inaccurate information. But if you provide false information, then that is...
What's the difference between inaccurate and false?
Well, inaccurate would mean... well, false is basically I put someone else's name. Yeah, inaccurate, maybe I have a typo. My name is not a full name, you know. A number that I give is, you know, missing a digit. The email I gave is probably is something I don't use it anymore. So
it's more like identity theft, but not intention doesn't factor here. It's more like matters of identity theft. Okay. I guess one last thing is PDPA does not extend towards the government collection of personal data. They can, so a service like PsyConnect, if it's provided by the government, would not be considered illegal.
Yes, certainly. In fact, I would think that the government should take over, you know, the information in PsyConnect and use it as, you know, a public service, and then tell consumers your data has been breached. We as government, we are helping you, and these are the steps you can do to ensure your data is, you know, the other information that you have is secure.
What did you learn from this episode? It was something that surprised you, or it was something that is inevitable and something like this will happen again in the future?
Well, data breaches has happened long time before Data Protection Act. Nothing didn't surprise me because before this telco breach, there was another breach. If I'm not mistaken, it's the student's information that's being breached. But before that, there were many other incidences of data breaches everywhere. Some companies even receive blackmail and say that I have your data, pay me this amount of money. I will not go and leak it, you know, for example. But one thing I learned is the inadequacy of our law. PsyConnect is giving a public service. It is for the good of consumers. Why shut it down? The website, I mean, in some part and section, it may fall under Section 130, but to me, if it's for public service, no monetary benefit was made by the person. I think the law should be amended to give way for public interest.
Chinong, thank you very much for speaking to me today. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.